case for argument is United States versus Almaray. Ms. Christensen.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joanna Christensen. I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois. I represent the appellant Fayez Albury in this case. I'd like to start with the dollar amount in this case, $1,750,000, an amount of restitution determined by the court without findings, based on estimates, guesses, and in the end, a mathematical error. As is detailed in our brief, the district court started with the first number, which was the number of redeemed food stamps, which was $2,100,000, an estimate. The actual number was about $6,000 higher than that. That number was available to the court, but yet not used. That is the first important mistake in this case, and set the tone for the rest of the calculation errors. The second number is a little more difficult, and it's the amount of average annual eligible food stamp sales. Food sales that are eligible for food stamp redemption. And the government used Mr. Albury's guess on the USDA food stamp form of $180,000 a year. That was a guess made by Mr. Albury after his business had only been functioning for approximately 5 months, and turned out, based on the government's show of other similar stores, to be very low. Comparing all of the government's similarly situated stores in size, location, and business, the average annual food sales is over $277,000. Taking out the least accurate store, Tower Deli, which had hundreds of thousands of dollars less in annual food sales, that number is increased to $350,000 in annual eligible food sales.
What is the accurate number as far as you're concerned?
Well, Your Honor, as far as the actual food sales for Mr. Albury, there is none in the record. That's part of our difficulty here. And there were no findings by the district court, which is another difficulty in this case. We submit that the most accurate would be an average of the stores that are closest to Mr. Albury's store and seem to have the same amount and type of eligible food sales. That number is the $357,000that's cited in our brief. Using that number and making the calculation for the full 25-month scheme, the restitution is reduced from $1.75 million to a little over $1.3 million. Still a substantial amount, but $400,000 less than it was with the erroneous and estimated calculations. And finally, if the court does not agree with us on these issues, we do note that above and beyond everything, there was a mathematical error in this case. $15,000 taken from $84,000 is not $70,000, it's $69,000. That in and of itself means $25,000 extra was added to the restitution error because of a mathematical miscalculation that was started in the government submission, I believe, and just adopted by the pre-sentence report in the district court. That itself should be remanded for correction. Unless the court has questions about the restitution order in this case, I will move to the Booker issue and submit that there was a Sixth Amendment error in this case. Mr. Albury did not admit all facts that were necessary, but the district court found.
But do you make that argument with respect to restitution?
Booker?
Do you think Booker applies to restitution?
I do not believe it does, Your Honor. There's no case law that I am aware of that has interpreted Booker either affecting or not affecting restitution. I believe restitution is a purely statutory determination and is not affected by the Booker case, and we certainly have not argued in this case that it is. I know that the government made a suggestion that we were. I am under the assumption of just clarifying the issue for the court that Booker does not affect restitution. The Booker determination does, however, affect Mr. Albury's sentence. That there was a Sixth Amendment violation, I believe that we are in agreement on, that it was error and that it was plain, we also are in agreement on, and of course, which leaves the last two prongs of plain error. As we submitted in our supplemental brief, the second supplemental brief we filed after Booker, that the error in this case did affect Mr. Albury's substantial rights in that he was sentenced under a mandatory and binding guideline scheme based on findings made by the district court. That scheme has now been determined to be unconstitutional, and to receive a sentence from that scheme affected Mr. Albury's substantial rights.
Now, he was sentenced at the top of the range, right?
He did receive a sentence at the top of the range.
If this were remanded without those restrictions, with those options still available, would your client be exposed to a higher sentence?
I believe, Your Honor, that that is a possibility we have discussed with our client. And, however, I believe that there are strong legal arguments against receiving a higher sentence, both ex post facto and due process arguments.
So he can get it lower but not higher?
That would be definitely our argument. Like, similar to the restitution issue, this will all shake out in the coming months and perhaps years, but we would argue that that is inappropriate based on the due process clause and the ex post facto considerations.
I don't understand that.
Well,
unless the prosecutor is acting, or the judge is acting vindictively in giving a higher sentence, there's no rule against a higher sentence. Government is permitted to appeal from sentences.
That's true, Your Honor. The government did not appeal in this case, which I believe would counsel against that.
What difference does it make? The point is, if the government is permitted to appeal, that shows that an erroneous sentence can be corrected upward as well as downward.
I believe it can.
What does that have to do with due process or ex post facto?
And that's certainly an argument that has been undeveloped because of the new nature of the law. It is something that's being discussed, certainly.
I don't understand you. They've been upward. We have often, when we remand cases, we warn that there is a danger that to the defendant that he may end up with a higher sentence when he's resentenced.
And that certainly is a possibility.
It's always
in this
been
case.
A possibility. I don't understand what constitutional objection there could be to that.
Well, the constitutional objection was that he has been sentenced erroneously, unconstitutionally.
Precisely. Now he has to be sentenced properly.
Correct. And the shift in the system would violate due process.
I don't understand you.
Well, Your Honor, I admit it's an
you
argument.
You want him to be resentenced.
Correct.
Well, and you realize that when he's resentenced correctly, it could be a higher sentence.
I do realize that, Your Honor. And it's not before this court, obviously. That would be a determination that would
what
be.
What the possible argument could be.
It's a possibility. I'm not saying that it's going to be accepted by the district court or by this court, but I believe that while we agree that sentences could be higher on resentencing, in not just this case, but other cases as well, we would vehemently argue against that, as is our duty, and raise every possible argument that has not been foreclosed by case law.
Well, they have been foreclosed, because this issue has arisen constantly.
Albeit in
that's
different
why there's
contexts.
This rule about, you know, vindictive increases in sentences on remand. If it's not vindictive, it's permitted.
Correct,
Nothing
Your
in
Honor.
Booker changes that.
I don't believe that Booker in and of itself changes that, but I believe that the changing circumstances in the law may affect that.
Okay.
So moving on to the fourth prong, which we have already sort of been discussing, they're really interrelated with the third. In this case, Mr. Albury did receive the high end of the guidelines. However, the district court was completely bound by the guideline range and not allowed to consider many factors that it now can consider, such as Mr. Albury's age and education level, and the fact that he may be a deportable alien and would receive less preferential treatment in the BOP, which this court and every other court I'm aware of forbid the district court from considering before Blakely and Booker. That may be a consideration at this time. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. I'll reserve the remainder.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Mr. Shakeshaft?
Good morning. May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Tom Shakeshaft. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney here in the Northern District of Illinois. The appellant has raised three issues: the restitution amount, The judgment of conviction issue that we confessed error on for limited scope of remand just to correct the judgment of conviction and the Booker issue. With regard to the restitution amount, the defendant did not object either to the pre-sentence report nor at sentencing to the restitution amount. And so the arguments that counsel makes about potential small adjustments, I really believe, are swallowed by the standard of review. He did not object. It's a plain error review. And the calculation of the restitution amount was reasonable. He took the amount of the food stamp, amounts of food stamp sales, and subtracted from that the estimate that the defendant himself, in sworn application, had come up with. That's $2.1 million. Subtracting the $180,000 annual amount for over 25 months, comes to a restitution amount of $1.75 million. The defendant did not object. District Court reasonably found that amount, and on appeal, they now raise mathematical issues. The standard of review is very deferential to a district court's finding of a restitution amount, and consequently, it's the government's position that the $1.75 million restitution amount to the United States government in the food stamp program was the correct amount and should be affirmed. I will not address the judgment of conviction issue unless the court has any questions about it. It was a clerical error between the sentence that Judge Lindberg imposed from the bench and the actual just judgment of conviction itself. And consequently, the judgment of conviction itself is, I think, okay. With regard to the Booker issue, in this case, the district court sentenced the defendant to the high end of the guideline range. The guideline range here was 41 to 51 months. The district court sentenced the defendant to a 51-month sentence and, in fact, made the point at the sentencing hearing that the district court was opting to forego an upward departure and to satisfy itself with a sentence at the high end of the guideline range. The district court, if to the extent that the record is clear on anything, is that the district court was constrained not to go higher than it otherwise might have.
Did he say he wanted to go higher or what?
Well, all he said, and I'm quoting for your honor, is that that the district court would satisfy itself and opt to forego an upward departure and to satisfy itself with a sentence at the high end of the guideline range. In part, the district court did say because an upward departure would have required notice to the defendant. So I can't get inside the district court's head, but it certainly from the record appears that his inclination would have been to go higher had he not been constrained by the guidelines.
What do you do with the argument that when a district judge is sentencing under the guidelines, when he thought they were binding, he is trying to compare the particular defendant before him with the offenders that the Sentencing Commission would have considered at the bottom of the top of the range. And when he picks a point in that range, it's relative to, you know, that the average offender, the less severe, the more severe.
Well, assuming that is correct, even in this instance, the judge clearly, the district court found that he was more culpable than the average defendant within
that
guideline.
The average would presumably be in the midpoint of the range. Now, what if the judge thought the whole range was too high?
In the appropriate case, that may be the point. That might be the case. In this case, there's no evidence in the record that's what the court thought.
Well, sure, but a conscientious judge would feel himself bound by the judgment of the Sentencing Commission in setting the guidelines. And yet if he were told the guidelines were purely advisory, he might think that range was too high.
That certainly could be the case.
So shouldn't he be given a chance to consider that?
Well, this is...
It?
Pardon me, I'm sorry.
Shouldn't he be given a chance to address it?
Well, I'm
familiar with the procedure the Second Circuit has prescribed in the Crosby case.
I am, Your Honor, and
why
this
isn't that the simplest way to resolve these questions rather than speculation?
This is my first post-Booker argument, but I am aware that the court has several other panels have addressed other government lawyers about this issue, and I've had discussions within our office, and it is actually from what I understand there. In at least our office, the Northern District's view, some problems with the Second Circuit's approach. But in
like
conversation,
what?
Well, one that the remand to the district court, in one respect, almost delegates the plain error review to the district court.
So what?
Well, in conversations I've had, Judge Easterbrook the other day, I understand, was on a panel in which he suggested what might be a more appropriate mechanism, which would be a more limited remand, not remanding it. The Court of Appeals would retain jurisdiction, and in appropriate cases, ask the district court to inform the Court of Appeals of whether or not the district court might have come to a different sentence. At least our office's view, is a preferable mechanism because the Court of Appeals here would retain jurisdiction and allow the district court to inform the Court of Appeals' decision on the plain error review rather than delegating the plain error review.
I thought that was Crosby.
It's my understanding of Crosby, and I could be mistaken, that it is a remand the Court of Appeals is not retaining jurisdiction. It is a remand with all of the repercussions.
The judge under Crosby is not required to resentence. That would be the real remand. The judge just states whether he would give a different sentence.
But, for example, if the judge said that he would not give a different
right.
sentence, and just is that a final judgment that's then appealable again? I mean, I don't mean to ask, but that is one of the problems. It is, in a sense, pardon me?
You give the same sentence, maybe.
But it would that not be a remand in the absence of error?
Well, no, I think if the judge says that he would give the same sentence, that shows there was no plain error, right?
But that would
shows
be the district.
No plain error, then the previous judgment should be affirmed.
I think the difference, Your Honor, is that would be the district court making that decision, would it not be, that there was no plain error, as opposed to the district court informing the Court of Appeals what the district court might have done and allowing that to play a role in the Court of Appeals calculation of
right.
whether plain error occurred.
No, I think that's fine. Maybe that is slightly different from Crosby. Because your suggestion just eliminate an intermediate step. You wouldn't need another appeal. You just notify the Court of Appeals what the district judge had.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in fact, this court has endorsed a limited remand for that for a convenience sake.
Yeah, we've certainly.
On numerous occasions.
Yeah. Well, we use limited remands when there's some lack of clarity. There's some additional information we need from the district court. So this is a situation like that.
Fair. Unless the panel has any additional questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Shaikh. Ms. Christensen, how much time does she have? 1 minute?
Just shortly, Your Honors. The government, about the restitution, says that these are mere small adjustments, and to Mr. Albury, $400,000 is not a small adjustment. Even in the bigger picture, it may be small compared to $1.75 million. And the government, again, has not defended the mathematical error. I still think that it needs to be corrected regardless of any other findings on any other of our arguments on that issue.
Mathematical error, that's the incorrect subtraction of
15,000 minus
70 from 84.
15
from 84.
Instead
of 14.
Right. $1,000. Right. It ends up being a $25,000 difference in restitution.
Just based on that error. Yeah.
And I believe, because it is going back for the simple change for the supervised release condition, if the court were so inclined, that could also be corrected. And finally.
Going back for that supervised release, would that be a limited remand?
Well, Your Honor, I would argue that it should not be, but based on the government's concession, I think that that is that's probably the most appropriate step in those situations. I don't believe just that error would unbundle the entire sentencing package.
Well, you want a real remand, just at least to correct the judgment.
Correct.
About the deportation. But it could be limited with respect to the Booker issue.
With respect to the Booker issue?
Right.
Unfortunately, although Wednesday is the only day this week I'm not arguing, I did not listen to Judge Easterbrook's argument yesterday, and perhaps I should have. I'm a little unfamiliar about his solution.
Okay. That's fine.
So I can't address it. But unless the court has further questions, thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Maybe you could bring those of us who are not in the loop up to date. What was, as you put it, Judge Easterbrook's argument? What's your understanding of his argument in this debate?
My understanding, and this is just from listening to what Mr. Shankshaf has said, is that he agrees somewhat with the Second Circuit in Crosby. But my understanding of Crosby is that it's going back on a full remand for the district court to make this decision, and Judge Easterbrook would prefer a limited remand, perhaps to certify a question to the district court. I don't know if that's a possibility or not, as to would Booker make a difference in this situation. That's my understanding, Your Honor.
Did you say you're arguing every day this week?
I am.
All on Booker?
Mostly. I try to argue other issues because it's, you know, gets a little boring otherwise. But I have 6 arguments total this week, Your Honor.
Wow.
So thank you for your patience.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Christensen, and thank you to the defenders for all their hard work. And thank you, Mr. Shakespeare. So next case for our